Hey everybody, my name is Bob Brumfield. I'm a developer on the Patterns and Practices team, and this, you guys know him by now. He's been on like the whole time.
CopyCon!
Go away.
Echo!
I've been working with the Prism team primarily, and I helped out a little bit on the phone stuff. And Scott started off doing a lot of the Azure stuff, and then he moved over to the phone project. So we're going to talk today about Developer's Guide, the stuff we've been working on, the Windows Phone 7. We have a lot of stuff to go over. So we'll be doing kind of the highlights, the high-level stuff, and try to give you a flavor of what's in the guide and some ideas about how you can put together nice phone applications. So with that, I think I'll let Scott going to take the first part of this, and then I'll jump in the middle.
All right. So, Windows Phone 7. Lots of stuff in Windows Phone 7. Lots of capabilities in Windows Phone 7. I'm not going to try and sell you on Windows Phone 7. Charlie already did that for me. And but we want to take a little bit of a tour around, not from a what is Windows Phone 7 from a consumer standpoint, but what is it from a developer standpoint? What do you have to think about when you're building these applications for the Windows Phone 7? What do you need to do? What do you need to think about? What is this new world that I'm going to be getting myself into? It is a platform. Even though it has a lot of the same things, .NET, Silverlight, there are some nuances that you have to deal with.
How many people have done mobile development at all, whatever platform? So some of you are going to be familiar with some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, so we're probably not going to tell you anything you didn't know, but we probably will give you one little tip, and that's why you came. So, Metro. So when you start building these applications, you really need to think about the design and what it's going to look like. And there is a whole set of design guidelines around and principles about making these apps. Because when you make your app, there's going to be, how many Twitter clients do you think there's going to be? A lot. How many different apps of the same type is going to be? How do you differentiate yourself, your app that you're going to sell for 99 cents or $999, whatever it is, from the rest of the world? It's your design. It's all about building beautiful apps on the platform. And this design is called Metro. So this is all about how can I make something that makes it easy for people to look at, it's pleasing for them to use, it's absolutely amazing to use, and when they use it, they're like telling their friends about it. That's what you want to focus on. That's what you want to do with this. And Metro helps you do that because it allows you to kind of build apps that focus on it. And it's all built into the phone. We'll go over a lot of that when we dive into the code later. You also have to decide up front, what are you building? I personally want Pac-Man. So whoever's building Pac-Man, please hurry up and do it. Or are you building just like this task-focused, that is a picture of our app that we'll show you a little later, actually running on the phone. Or are you building something that is more kind of, you know, social or businessy or something like that? So the reason that you have to kind of decide that is there's kind of two platforms on the phone. There's XNA and there's Silverlight. They're not mutually exclusive. You can do things. There are things you need XNA for in your Silverlight app because you're going to do sound or other, like with the sensors and things like that. You may need XNA within your Silverlight app. We actually do that within our application. We have sound, and we kind of use the sound from XNA to be able to record voice. And we'll show you all that stuff when we show you the application. But you need to decide that up front. Like, what are you going to do? What are you building? What are you going to do? Because are you taking over the full screen? Are you going to have something that's, you know, more interactive? And are you going to build a connected app? How many people have a smartphone? Almost all of you. The rest of you, don't buy into the hype.
Nice sales job.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. But how many people have a phone? Have applications on their phone that are not connected? Now, normally, all my apps that I use, I usually have some kind of connection. And when you think about the phone, there are different types of connections. It's really a mostly connected device because I have 3G, I have Edge, I have AT&T.
So you're never connected.
Exactly. So I also have Wi-Fi and maybe something else, GPS. So these things are on the all capabilities of the phone, but you're going to build this connected app, you need to be cognizant of the fact that I might be, I don't know, on AT&T and at this symposium and can't get connected. So when I do these things, when I talk about building a connected app, you have to be cognizant of the fact that it's not connected all the time. I may be on wireless, I may be on 3G. There's other interesting problems you may run into, which is there's a lot of carriers that put limits on how much your bandwidth can be. So you can't just open up a pipe and start streaming video, I mean, unless you're Netflix. And then, but when you do that, how much bandwidth do you really have? If I'm over Edge, how many people have ever been on Edge? Yes. How slow is that? Are you think you're going to watch a video over Edge? Probably not.
Well, from a user's perspective,
yes.
Too, right?
Yeah.
That if they're getting charged per megabyte, right? I mean, you would
yes.
be considerate of those type of things as well.
Exactly. So it's all about being a good citizen on this platform. You want to think about these things because it's not just about going, hey, I can build an app, I can connect it to my service, and voila, all is good. You have to think about when I'm not connected, what bandwidth I'm going to be using, all these different things when I'm connected. And I'd say 9 out of 10 apps going to be connected. We all live on this earth. We're all going to live on this phone. It's a shared environment. So don't think just because you're the only person on the phone. Although you might be, you want all your apps on the phone and nobody else's, but that's a different story. So when you're in the shared environment, you've sharing the memory space with the rest of the apps. So I know that Charlie said something about it, but when you talk about storage, and we'll talk about that in just a second, but talk about storage. You're, unlike the regular Silverlight and other systems, there's no quota. So if your app sits there and spins and gets locked up and uses all the available memory storage on the phone, probably some unhappy customers. And the other thing is, this shared environment, there's other applications on the phone. So, for example, when you actually have the device, there's a thing called tombstoning, which we'll go over a lot more when we talk about the code, that you need to be prepared for. It's also a phone. People are going to get phone calls. They're going to get interrupted. So when you're in this shared environment, please be kind.
Give a hoot.
Rewind.
Don't believe
it. Yeah, whatever. But also storage. There is storage on the device. Right now, the capabilities of the device have isolated storage. So if you've ever worked with isolated storage, that's what you get. There's other third-party people that are building out databases and different type of storage mechanisms on the phone, but there is storage on the phone. But one of the things to think about is, what do you want to store on the phone versus what do I want to store somewhere else? Because remember, I may want to access cache data or simple data on the phone, but if you're talking about Xbox Live, you think they store all your Xbox information on the phone? No, they probably store it out on Xbox Live Central Server so that they can get back. You can get that data from anywhere. So if you have for example, our app, which is just kind of an extension of another application, it's just like another head on your back end, then you have to think about, where do you really store this data? I may cache data locally, but I should be able to retrieve that from somewhere else. It shouldn't be my main storage area for my application. Because remember, this phone could be wiped, it could be stolen, it could go away, I might buy an upgraded phone, I want to move my data around. How do I all these things are going to happen. This device is got a lifespan of maybe a year or a year and a half, depending on how long you keep your phone. If you're like me, it's a once-a-year problem. And don't be like this guy. Carry one bullet around, hoping that everything just works. Security. You can't forget about it. But when you think about securing this device, we have the device. You can put in your PIN. You can open up the device. You can. But we have all the crypto APIs, but you have to start thinking about, what is it that I really want to store on the device? And how do I want to secure it? Because there's different problems that you can run into. And we talk about a lot of this in the guide. But if you start thinking about encrypting your data, where are you going to store the key? Well, if I store the key on the phone, really, what's the point of encrypting the data on the phone? But if I store the key in the cloud, what happens if I'm disconnected? Sure is annoying for have to have my user not be able to use my app. Do you want to ask for the username and password every time? Probably not. That could get very annoying, too. Remember, this is a very task-oriented human device. I want to be able to pick up my phone, use it, and be done with it. So think about this in terms of security. So a lot of times when you talk about you want to have secure access to your website or to your services, use some kind of protocol that allows you to maybe store a key on the device. So if you have, like, OpenID or a Live ID, I can then kind of get a key that I can store on my device that, always, that knows that I can send back in the headers or whatever I do with however I authenticate on my phone. I can then send that back and forth with my request that I can then authenticate, but I don't have to ask for a username and password every time or some kind of key every time. I'm not interrupting my user's flow every single time. But security, it's a big topic. We could spend hours upon hours back and forth on it, but don't be like this guy. And remember, it is a phone. People will get phone calls while they're in the middle of your app. And it's really nice if you take them back to pretty much where they were. So this is that whole tombstoning thing. So when your app gets created, I'm using your app, all of a sudden I get a phone call. Hi, Mom. Yeah. That's great. Wonderful. I'll talk to you soon. Click. And I click that back button. I'd like to go back exactly where I was in the app. I want to do what I was doing before. So make sure you support that tombstoning. And we've actually, some of the guidance we have, we talk about how to help you do the tombstoning. We actually have some framework-ishy pieces in the guidance to help you handle those interruptions and help you make that tombstoning easier. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the guide and its kind of overall of what we're going to talk about and show you today. So I'm sure all of you who were here yesterday, since we're all together all the time, saw that we did the Tailspin ISV app for Azure. So we all remember that, because that was before the drinking began. And what we did was we took that application and we extended it and said, now we want to add these capabilities. We want to put some services on top of that. When we built the V2, when you download the V2 application, we didn't have any services. So we said we want to extend the application so that people can take that survey on the phone. So we've added this idea that, so if I'm a big supermarket and I want to run a promotion, I can have people download the apps and I can have them take surveys and they get coupons, or I get paid for going out and doing surveys for some retailer. Those kind of things you could do with this Tailspin application. So now we've put services in there. We've actually said we want to have we want to have people who can subscribe to push notifications to allow them to notify them when new surveys are available. How many people know what push notification is? They've got a phone that annoys them every time Facebook pops up. Yeah, I turned that off too. Anyway, the other thing that, and then the other piece that we have is how to get that into the app marketplace. We're not going to cover a whole lot about the marketplace. I know Charlie did a little bit of that. The book covers a heck of a lot more than probably we can in an hour. A little bit, but does anybody have any questions about kind of how we're going to go through this? Anyone? Bueller? Good.
So real quick, this app is a realistic app, right, in that it actually does more than some of the stuff we do at PNP, particularly from the Prisma space where we kind of mock out the services in the back end. Right? We're going to have actual services that we connect up to that are hosted on Azure. And this application, from a scenario perspective, is a survey-taking application where somebody decides to help a company out and give surveys for money, right? So what I'm going to show here in the architecture of the app is probably what you'd expect, right? We're connected with a bunch of back-end services to get a list of surveys. On the device, you can see we cache that little database there. It means we cache that in the middle. And so we have a UI piece. We have services on the phone that we interact with, right? And we're going to walk through some of those. And then we sync up with back-end services. Push notification is when new surveys come up in your area that you can be notified of, and then you can go give those surveys and do whatever. So we're going to talk through highlights of this application as I walk through this. But first, I want to show you the app so that we can all have a kind of context to talk about when I'm showing you pieces. So somewhere in here. Voila.
Did you cut your fingernails?
I think so.
Okay, good.
Yeah, get my pedicure or my manicure.
So this phone is a Samsung Tailor, I think they call it. I think it is a pre-production for what we have, but it looks just like the rest of them. They're all the same. That's the great thing about the phone.
And you'll see we don't even have the fancy hookup that shows.
Yeah, we don't have that. We can't even
do it the hard way. Right? So here's the application, right? This has already been deployed on here. It's pinned to the start menu. And so I shouldn't say start menu, right? Start screen.
Start screen.
And you'll see that the first thing that comes up, it's basically saying, hey, here's your list of surveys. You don't have any. You actually, first time we've logged in, you've never even registered the user here. And one of the things we talk about in the guide is decision point. You know, we originally actually had this where it jumped right into the app settings where the user could log in right at the beginning, but that created a weird experience when you hit the back button, right? So the guide, we talked through some of these things that you have to consider in building and putting together the UI for the app. So here what I need to do is I need to go actually log in. So here I'm going to put my username. And we have a fixed set of username and passwords actually don't matter for this. And I'm going to subscribe to push notification. And I'm going to allow Tailspin to access my location. So one of the things that we talked about in the guide too is for sets of services that are phone specific, you need to make sure, particularly if you want to get through the marketplace, that you are asking permission to access certain certain services. And you also have to be sensitive when you use those that they're actually still enabled and available. So we're going to save that. And it's actually going to, in theory,
it's saving. It's the little progress bar is working.
See the little progress bar? I don't know if you.
We are on AT&T, so don't let's not.
That's not there. So it's going to save. It's going to take a while to save. And this is actually connecting up with the back-end service, subscribing to push notification, which Scott will go over in more detail. Right? Still don't have any surveys, right? I haven't actually synced up with anything here. So one of the other things we can do is synchronize now. And this is actually going to go out there, collect the list of surveys for this user based on their tenants that they've selected that they want to do this for. So this is, you can see a little pop-up saying, hey, we have 8 new surveys. We have a number of things here. And the thing I'm going through here, if you haven't seen it before, is the pivot control. That is basically dimensions over the same sets of data, right? So this is by length, this is new, this is favorites. I don't have any favorites yet, and I'll show you I can set a favorite just by holding something down. Gives a little menu here, mark is favorite, in theory. Oop, jumped ahead there. And so now we can see stuff in the favorites, right? And what I want to take, service here.
Yeah, we have.
May have started stuff a few too many times there. So now when I want to take a survey, here we'll do the symposium phone demo. Right, so now we switch over to another control. This is the panorama control. And think of it as we've laid the survey out in a big wide sheet of paper, and we're just being able to pan through that, right? So let's say we wanted to say, hey, I'm from Seattle. And come on. We did mention this was a pre-production phone, I think.
And it is running a developer build of the OS so that we didn't have to have all these signed signatures and put it through the marketplace to get the app on the phone.
Right. And so, you know, what topics are you interested in? Give me a quote from Breakfast Club.
You are a Zio Maxi Zoom Dweeby.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. All right, stop recording. And then we can play that. Let's see if it came.
You'll have to hold your mic up.
Oh, I don't think I'll be able to do that. All right.
Or whatever.
So we'll take a picture of your favorite PNP person. This is excellent. And just for the sake of size here, I'm going to make sure that I'm not going to take a really high-quality picture because it takes a long time to send back to the server. And I'm going to pick the lowest resolution possible. All right. And now, he's my favorite person. Actually, that's not true.
Hey.
All right.
That's right. That's my favorite problem.
All right, so you see that came in, and my experience so far is definitely up in the 5-star range.
If I can. No, it's not.
It's not? It's 1-star?
1-star.
You think it's only 1-star ever?
Yeah.
Did I mention this is a pre-production phone here? I get a few things locking up. Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Just from a debugging standpoint, how would you figure out at that point where...
So you can actually... I'm going to answer kind of a couple of questions here. Why is that you can actually hook this up to the phone. You can hook the debugger straight up to the phone. So if I plug my phone in, and maybe if we have time at the end, I'll show it, and I'll be happy to, when we're back after this, I'll be able to show you if anybody's interested, because I have a developer account. I can hook that. You have to go out, get a developer account, sign up. So all that's free, but it's just once you plug your phone in, you can plug the phone in, and you hook the debugger to it. I would say the person who asked about the VM, and I know this is kind of a pseudo crappy way of doing it, but if you get a phone, it's actually you can hook that straight to the VM, and you don't need the emulator. You can do everything on the phone, so you can debug it, you can deploy it to the phone, you can you have to go through the whole thing. But in Visual Studio, you'll notice that they'll have a drop down that says where do I want to run this, and it says emulator or device, and I can plug my device straight into the through the USB, through the micro USB cable that guy comes with, and go and hit F5, and then it's firing up the phone. It actually deploys it out to deploys it over to the phone, starts it up, and you're debugging right on the app on the phone. So you can actually run through, like, if you see these glitches and stuff like that, is it the phone? Is it my code? What's going on? So you can do all these things with the phone.
So
yes. Yes, right here.
Is this customer should have a developer and registration, and then I can distribute like that?
Yeah, you sure can. You just tell them to sign up, get them a distribution account, and do that. That's we want a million developers by next week.
All right. All right, so if we save this off, right, we're storing this in isolated storage, and then we have a little progress bar for each survey. If I go back into it, I can complete the survey and by hitting the little checkbox. Come on, come back. Right, and then we have one survey that is stored locally. It's completed locally but not synchronized. Right, and then when we're ready to synchronize, we can go ahead
and the
sync button.
Yeah, and the reason that we do that is because you may be, if you're thinking about this scenario, you may want to take multiple surveys. So I may be in the middle of a parking lot, you know, bothering people, going, hey, would you like to take a survey? Hey, would you like to take a survey? Would you like to take a survey? And do like 30 of them and then sync. And I can submit all 30 at the same time. And we'll show you the code and stuff like that.
All right, so that's the basic application. Just wanted to walk through kind of how that works. So when we're pointing and looking at things, you guys have something to map that back to. All right.
Yay, Bob.
All right, so what I'm going to let's open up the solution here, right? So this solution looks really intimidating because there's lots of things in it. And this includes the Azure side of stuff as well as the phone side of stuff. We actually offer a phone-only solution if you want to just look at the phone-related bits, and that has, you know,
two projects.
Yeah, two, I think, or maybe three projects in it, right? So I'm going to start with a survey list, which is the thing that you comes up there and was originally blank, and after we synced, it showed a bunch of things. And this uses the panorama control, and the panorama control is somewhere in here. Actually, it uses the pivot control. And the pivot control, right, we fixed the number of dimensions for this particular example. And since we're using view and view model, not that you have to for the phone, but it's something that we chose to do because we thought it fit this particular application well. Doesn't necessarily fit every application you're going to build on the phone well, right? So if you're building your Torchlight app, view model may not be necessary for those kind of applications, right? And so this thing has a fixed number of dimensions. If you want to make this more dynamic, there's some things you need to do to interface with the phone control to add that level of dynamic bits in. But the example we'll show here uses a fixed set of dimensions that the view model offers up. And I'll show you the view model real quickly.
So a real quick question. How many people are developing for the phone today that's here?
A few.
I knew that dude was because I saw his shirt. That guy in the back, really? You got to be kidding me.
Right, and so let's go to the build pivot dimensions here, which is where we build this. And so this is basically, you can see this actually is a bunch of stuff we're pulling out from the store, right? These are the templates for each of the surveys, and then we're providing views for the length, which ones are new, which ones are my favorite on top of that, right? So it's really slicing up that current view, right? So there's other interesting things that we didn't have a need to do, but that you might end up doing, right? If you need to build an infinite list of things, right? We didn't cover some of these scenarios here. We talk about some of the considerations in the guide about building your views and view models. All right, so let's go to something else. I'm going to dive into, well, actually, there's one more thing I wanted to show here. So one of the other things that we're using here is the app bar, and that's that little thing, little black thing at the bottom, all those little buttons I was pressing, right? And the app bar looks deceptively like a full Silverlight control, but it's one of those things that actually has a little idiosyncratic. It's not quite a true or full Silverlight control in that you can't bind things to it. So if you're doing things like MVVM, you can't bind commands to that if you're familiar with those terms. If you're not, stay tuned because I think Carl is going to be talking about MVVM later today. Yay. And so we did some things in here that help support the MVVM stuff, right? So we have some of the Prism libraries, but we extended them with phone-specific extensions to help handle some of these things, right? So we have this application bar button command that lets you sync those two things together based on their text here, right? So we've shown how you can enable some of those things if you are, in fact, using MVVM in your applications on the phone. All right. And then the other things I wanted to dive into was let's look at the actual taking of a survey here. We'll go back to views, take survey view. And this one is loading slowly. Let me.
Yeah, it's trying to cider in all its goodness.
Need to close one of these, and it's not the right way to close it. Someday I'll get there. Be patient. All right. So here we're using the panorama control, right? And you'll see we're doing some things that we pulled in from Prism, which is a data template selector to allow us to pick views based on type. But the interesting thing here actually is that when we're saving, or when you get interrupted and there's a phone call or something on those lines, you want to be sure to save off the current state. So if we go to the survey list, or not the take survey view model, right, one of the things we're doing is we've routed all the activation, deactivation events to the view model so that they can tombstone, you heard Scott use that term, which is basically store that data off in a special location. This location is not necessarily going to have the data. If you are going to be reactivated, it will have the data. But if your app's down for a long time, that may go away and your app may relaunch, so it doesn't stick around indefinitely. And so this is one area that you can store stuff when you're being deactivated, and we tie this into it's a phone service that offers this kind of state bag to store the stuff off. So we basically are storing off the answer and the current index so that if you come back after a phone call, you'll orient right to where you were in your survey. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, let me show that a little bit better. This thing is the greatest thing in the world. So this is being activated, is being deactivated, right? So we have a tombstoning. It's actually a static interface over some of this stuff.
Yes.
It's a variant of isolated storage.
So the question was, does it save locally? And yes, it does. It's a variant of.
And is it non-determinate how long it stays around?
What's that?
Is it non-indeterminate how long
it stays around? I think it will be relieved based on memory, but if your app is eventually closed, I think I'm not sure if it goes away right away, but it may not be available when it comes back.
So the question was, how long does that tombstoning information stay around? And it stays around long enough. So if I were to, and maybe we'll go back to the phone and show this, but if I get a phone call and then I go back, that tombstoning information will be there. But it's there as long as the phone is pseudo-resident in memory, or the application's in resident in memory. So if I go open up two or three more applications, that tombstoning information is probably going to be gone, because by the time I hit back, it's not there anymore.
It's going to have to relaunch your app.
Yeah, you've got to relaunch your app instead of activate it.
So you do have to kind of understand the life cycle of when tombstoning takes effect versus application starting and closing, right? And you'd be sensitive to that. So the point is that this is transient. You can't rely on this. You wouldn't store data you really wanted to save around. If you wanted to save the data around, you should have put it in isolated storage, right? And so here's an example when we save a survey, right? We use something called a survey store. Which is basically a view for surveys on top of isolated storage. And if I go to that.
Yes. So there is an app. There is an event that you get. So the question was, when I get I've tombstone, but when the app actually gets unloaded, do I get an event? And the answer is yes, you do get an event. It's kind of like if you've ever dealt with. It's in the app.xaml and code behind. You get this unloaded event, and then you will know that you can, if you have any unpersisted state, that you can persist at that point.
Right, so you have a...
I think it's what it is.
There's an app activated, deactivated. So we're tying in the things there, and there's an app closing that you can do things when your app actually is closing. So, so you could, in theory, take things and then decide to persist at that point in time. All right, so let me go back to the... So I was going to show you the survey store. So one of the things I wanted to point out in the survey store, nothing surprising if you've dealt with isolated storage, which if you're not familiar with it, it's effectively kind of a virtual folder structure that you can create files and folders in there if you want to and pull things out. And here, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to do plus. So here I wanted to just point out, you know, one of the things we're doing is we're storing things JSON serialized, right? And so this is part of how do you be a good citizen, take up the minimum kind of space required. So we're using JSON as a little more compressed format than, say, XML to be able to store stuff off. So this is one thing that we're doing. And you can see this in more detail in the guide itself.
And one of the things you think about when you talk about saving data, how you want to compress data or anything like that, remember, you're living on a battery-powered device. So you want to kind of lean towards whatever the least amount of power consumption. So even when you're bringing down data, if it's compressed, you have to uncompress it. The uncompressing the data costs more than if you just send it across the wire or uncompressed already. Because the amount of power you have to use to uncompress that data is not worth compressing the data. It's kind of a weird thing, but you have to think about these things as well. So yes, you can store that stuff and deactivate it since you're not guaranteed. There's no guarantee. Yes, because you could get, if the app crashes, you definitely will.
You'll lose it, right? Say that again. I'm sorry.
If your application is deactivated and you're only saving for state in memory, it's not guaranteed that the loading event will come because the power may.
Correct. So the question is. There's when you get, you may never get the closing event because they may pull the battery out, or something strange happens and the phone just and something and your app crashes or something like that. But yes, those things are. I mean, you do have to think about those things. You're in an environment where it's
a
little
unpredictable, right?
Yeah, it's unpredictable. What could happen? You may have, for example, because no one in here would ever write an app that crashed or did anything like that. Never. You may write your app, and then all of a sudden they go to a different app, even though you're in the backspace, and that app is horrible, and it crashes, and everything just dies, or it can't hung, so they have to pull the battery out. I don't know how many people have to do that before. Maybe you have to pull the battery out. Hopefully we'll never have to do that. Then your app is never going to get the closing event because the thing just died. So, yes, you have to think about all these different unpredictable things that could happen on the phone. So save your state. As often as possible.
Right. So now I'm going to talk about some of the services that the phone offers and demonstrate how we interface with some of those, right? So one of the things we do is we take a picture, right? And there's two things in the phone. Basically, they're all tasks, but they're either launchers or choosers. Launchers are things that you want to launch an activity that the user is going to do, like make a phone call or send an email. And choosers are things where you expect a response, right? So the camera capture task is actually a chooser. You're asking somebody to go take a picture and give a result to you. And so you'll see we're using this picture. And then one of the interesting things that the phone offers that a lot of other platforms aren't offering out of the box is the reactive extensions. I don't know how many people have seen or heard of the reactive extension framework, right? About a third, right? So this is like the other side of Link. It's like Link for events. It's a way to listen and subscribe to events and then build things on it in a pretty composable way. So we use this in some interesting ways that we think it's like Link, when Link first came out, it was really hard to understand. I'd write something, and I'd go, what did I just write? You kind of get that effect there. But over time, a little bit of time, you start to see how this can be composed. It makes it actually easier to read some code. So here, when we basically get a result back from a capture camera task, right, we're basically saying, if we have a photo that came back, we on the background, we create a picture file from that. And then we schedule on the dispatch of the UI thread the ability to create a picture bitmap and then display that, right? So we update these things. We can kind of compose these things. It would have been a little harder to do, a little more spread out if we had done it purely event-based. We can do that pretty a little bit easier with the reactive extensions, right? So this is event-based here. And I don't think you're going into much more, but we do this in a few places that I think are useful when we interact with services and do synchronization with back-end services as well.
Yeah, and one of the things, the cool thing about the reactive extension is the composability of it. So once I return something that's iObservable from the reactive extensions, I can pass that to another function that's in my in the reactive extension framework. So I can now, so you could have these isolated components because you want to build things in isolation and have them return observable collections or observable things, and I can then start composing them all the way up the stack with the reactive extensions. It's a little bit, we could spend a whole session
on this stuff, and it would be interesting. I mean, there's a good tutorial online if you want to learn more about it. But it's something we'll use, and you'll see. And I think it does end up making the code more readable, but it does take a little bit to get your head around what's going on.
So.
All right. And so the other thing I want to show you is that we talked about you kind of picking whether it's XNA or Silverlight, and then there's kind of things that fit right in the middle, squarely in the middle, right? And so some things just aren't available in the Silverlight version. So things like capturing a wave is actually something you have to go back to the XNA framework to do, right? And so in this case, we capture the recording here. Let me see if I have a capture recording. Where is it? Start recording. Right, where we get this microphone thing, and you can see, if I zoom in, you can see, right, this is actually part of the XNA framework. Right. And you have to do some special things to enable this, right? Because what effectively goes on is that the XNA framework has its own separate message pump to route its events. So you have to be able to start that in here. And there's a way we do that with what's called an XNA async dispatcher, something we wrote to basically fire the XNA message pump every so often so that we can have access to the microphone service. So that's probably the most popular one to interface with from an XNA perspective, right, to capture that thing. And then you have to reformat. You have to build a formatter to put it in a WAV format so that we could store it off, because that wasn't something that came out of the box either. So this application, right, shows you lots of dimensions, how to use a lot of the different phone features, how to interface with the XNA things, right? So there's a lot more here than we have time to go over with right now, because we also want to talk about kind of how you talk to the back-end services and some of those things as well. But if you dig into the application, read the guide about some of this stuff and how it was put together, I think it will help you understand some of the challenges you have and some of the things you need to consider when putting these applications together.
Yeah, the guide is pretty laid out pretty well to kind of give you this kind of the same way of flow of our talk, is where we talk about how to think about building the applications, all the kind of capabilities of the application, then how to kind of build data and sync data on the phone. Then we talk a little bit about connecting to the services and back end, as well as having a bunch of appendices on helping troubleshooting, debugging, all those good things as well on the phone. So connecting to services, so you know that the app is connecting to Azure in the cloud. We actually fronted our application with some WCF REST services. We didn't use OData. We actually went down this road of looking at using OData, but it was a little more difficult than number one, the client libraries for OData are not available on that phone yet. They have the SDK is not available, but it is in CTP beta, whatever they're in right now. So it's something we talk about in the guide, but we wanted to make use of things that were available to us today. So we use WCF REST services, and I'm going to show you a little bit about that. And we also have syncing in the phone. So we talk a little bit about sync. This is going to be a problem that everybody wants to solve. How do I sync my data to the cloud? And we have a very simplistic version of syncing data, and we took some very big liberties, only because it's a realistic app, but it's not real. Realistic, not real.
There's some scenarios we're not covering specifically. We call them out in the guide.
We call them out in the guide, because what we're really thinking is we didn't want to build a whole sync framework, because
it's hard.
Microsoft is already building one for you. And it's probably going to be available around the first quarter of next year. That's what they keep telling us anyway. But it's in CTP now. But it's coming from the SQL Server team, and it's right now they have synced to SQL Server, but we're not using SQL Server, so we didn't really have that capability. It's actually using all of our Azure blob storage, table storage, and things like that. But they are going to have something that syncs to not SQL Server, which probably connected to OData, which would probably come around the same time as all your OData clients. So let's talk a little bit about how we built this stuff on the phone for connecting to services. So you remember, this is the solution that has the entire big, huge, has also tailspin from the entire thing. From if you run this solution, it will run everything locally. It will run Azure. It will run the phone emulator. It will run everything. So
your lights will dim.
Your whole thing will start, you know, melting, and the world will come to an end. All those good things. So here we are, into the surveys and services. So one of the things you'll want to do is you probably want to start with an app that you want to extend. I mean, you may have an app that you want to do, but you may already have an application. Like Twitter was already on the web. They didn't just think, oh, well, it'd be a great mobile app. We should build a mobile application. No, they built a presence on the web first, and then they have this great social thing, but then they have devices that you can check all the time and see what your friends are doing and, you know, how the NFL is ruling football. Excuse me.
Don't make it political.
Sorry. I got to get off my soapbox. So I'm looking for what I want to show you. So we built the survey service. So basically this is just a WCF data service that we basically connected up and pulled data from table storage. And I won't go through all the Azure stuff because we went through that the other day. But this basically service is just a WCF REST services that we registered. And if you look in our app, oops, where's our host? Here we go. If you look in our global ASX, We just register a couple of routes. We're using the WCF4 stuff. How many people have worked with WCF REST4? I know Glenn asked this question the other day, but then he doesn't pay attention and moves on. You have registration and survey. So basically all registration is doing is we're allowing you to register your phone with us and to say, hey, I want to subscribe to push notifications. So that when we, and also we're storing a little bit of your data in the cloud. This is back where I say, where do you store the data? Well, we actually need to store this data in the cloud. We're actually storing what filters you want to use. And I don't think we went through the whole filters section of the thing. That's because we said it was three screens.
It's that would have been four. A fourth screen.
Yeah. So we had to, you know, it was a lie in the beginning of our talk. So we just register these routes for registration and surveys, because mostly we deal with surveys. And we also have registration for dealing with, I want to connect my phone. Here are the filters that I want. We only have one set of filters. You can imagine that this again, realistic application. I want to have multiple filters. I may want to filter a lot of things, but right now we just filter by tenant. So it allows you to kind of filter out what you see when you get a notification or what you get on the phone when you sync. Because I may not want every single company out there. I just want, you know, a couple of companies. So we do that. We actually have the survey service. There are ways of uploading. I just want to show you a little quick. One of the more interesting ones is this media. One of the other reasons is we have to upload streams. So one of the reasons we want to kind of show people how to do is you're not just dealing with text anymore when you talk about these smartphones. You're talking about all kinds of media that you can deal with, pictures, voice, all the different things, and how to upload that media. And we actually do that, and I'll show you on the phone how we do that, once you store all that information, is you can upload media. And again, this is not that hard. Where do we, for all those that were there, where do you think we store media? Just yell it out if you know. There you go, Blob. You are awake. You were paying attention. I feel validated. Thank you. So if we go back to the phone and we kind of look at where all these, not the cloud, the phone, where all these services are happening, we have a great little folder called services that we kind of do everything with. So let's look at the survey service and it'll look at the survey service client. There is one in there called Client Mock. The reason for that is if you open up the actual phone-only solution for all those that go, I don't really care about Azure, I just want to see this stuff on the phone, you can open up the phone-only solution and it will mock out all those back-end pieces. So it will show you a couple of surveys, you can connect to a few things, it all works. It's just you're not talking to Azure, you're just talking directly to some mocked-out services. So you can see that we have this setting store because we want to make sure, one of the things we want to make sure of is when you want to be able to get any information for the user that you want to send up, and the setting store stores this last sync date. So this is our attempt at doing a sync. So we keep up with when's the last time you did a sync for us, and then we send that along with a request, and I'll show you how we do requests in a second. But we send that along with a request, and the server goes, hey, what's all the surveys since this last time? Pretty simple, but effective. So if you go out here and you say, I want to get my new surveys, and this was my last sync date, we actually go out and get the surveys this is the path for the actual URL that we're going to do. Nothing exciting there. But we actually built this little fluid interface over top of the HTTP client. So bad news, good news. There's not a lot of help on the HTTP side on the phone. So there's not a whole lot of drag, drop, connect to service, proxy stuff. What you get is the web client. How many people have dealt with a web client before? Yes, some of you, good. For those that are going to build for the phone, learn it, love it, live it. So HTTP client is something we built to kind of wrap up this HTTP request that allows me to go out and create a web request and then go out and get that request. We always add in the authorization header. I will tell you that we just use a username and password. We didn't go down the route of trying to build a OData or Live ID or anything else, mainly because it's a realistic app. We want you guys to be able to run it when you fire it up, if you don't. So we also talk about in the guide. This is kind of a pseudo Don Knotts approach because we actually store the username and password on the phone. But it is an approach you can use. But it is just using basic authentication up in the cloud. So we are connecting to an H, We're connecting to HTTP. I will also give you the other thing you'll run into, is you can't really get certs on the emulator. So you need a valid, if you want to test the whole thing out, you'll need a valid cert to do HTTPS. But you'll want to do that anyway, because everybody uses HTTPS, right, to do secure connections, right? Yes, okay. But anyway, we add in the authorization, and we create that request. So we'd wrap this up because we always needed to have this. So we can, you can see then we have this extension for the request that we, again, in here use the reactive extensions. We make heavy use of reactive extensions throughout this application. We didn't at first, but after talking and looking finding out that it really does make doing async stuff pretty easy. So you can see we're using an observable from async pattern, this begin get response and end get response, and we're selecting the response back, and once we get the response stream, we can serialize the type, which is really just the whatever DTO that we're getting back and forth, and serialize that that stream and return that object, which is just a list of surveys. Yes?
No, oh. It does not.
Okay, so the good question, great question. Do reactive extensions come with .NET 4? The answer is no. Reactive extensions is actually something up. You can go Google Bing for it, Google with Bing, and get reactive and look for reactive extensions. It ships with the phone. It is a full-fledged member of the phone SDK, but it is not part of .NET 4. I think they're looking to try and get it out in .NET 4 or 5 probably.
So to be clear, there are interfaces that support the reactive extensions in .NET 4,
yes.
The iObservable interfaces, but there's
yes.
None of the things that help you build or query those, the observable class, those are all part of the reactive extensions framework, which is right now, I think, coming through research of
right.
That, but it, you know, there is a production version in the phone, right? It does.
So I will just I would just go ahead and show you that we have this post.json as well on here. These are just, we wrote these extensions because we got tired of writing the same thing over and over again. So we're lazy. We you know, the best programmers are lazy, so that we just keep writing this over. So you can see that we can get new surveys. We can save our survey answers. We actually have two different types. We have to kind of do this in dual mode because we have two different endpoints, one for media, one for the actual text. Media because we have to use streams to push all that up. But we have the two different modes here. We save and update the media, and we save and survey update the surveys. So, and again, you can see we make heavy use of the reactive extensions because we want to use this async pattern for everything. And again, you'll want to use async pattern. You don't want to block that main UI thread. So as you saw when we were doing, you saw that the little progress bar, you can have the progress bar down at the bottom, show things how they want. And you'll also want, to, when you do that, you'll also want your app to be able to still operate while something's happened. So you can imagine when I hit the sync button, and we didn't show all these different features, but you can play with it when you download it and put it on your phone because you're all going to buy one. That was better, right? Okay,
yeah,
good.
Nice job.
So when you actually download and start syncing, I can then go in and still look at other things. So I can have sync run in the background and then still go, oh, well, but now I still want to go take other surveys while I'm syncing, because I may have 30 surveys to upload, and then I want to go take surveys while I'm uploading surveys. So when you're building your app, you think about these things because you want that stuff to be working. You don't want to block the user from their task. Remember, this is I'm going in, getting things done. I don't want to wait around for something to happen because, again, life gets interrupted a lot. I have kids, I know. So you can also see, I'll show you real quick, this registration service. It's not as cool, but all this guy is doing now is, again, using the React Extension frameworks, and we're going getting the survey filter information. We're also going to go and say, once you click on your tenants, that's the fourth screen we didn't show you, you can filter out what tenants you want. We upload those back to the survey things. We also go, and this is a little bit about the push notification, so I want to talk about that
zoom
for a second. Huh?
Zoom in on it.
Yep. Plus. Whoa! Okay. So this HTTP notification channel. So a lot of this stuff is wrapped for push notification is wrapped up for you. I'm going to show you the server side as well. I wrapped up a bunch of things. There's two different types of notifications, or there's really three. There's two different types of notifications you can do. You can do tile messages. One of the things you can do is say, when something happens, you can have that tile on the beginning of your app. You can change, you can add a little badge icon, like a number, like you've got 30 new messages or 30 new surveys. You can change the tile text. I will warn you that that doesn't automatically change back. So once you change the tile text, it's there forever. So if you The good way, if you want to change the name of your app, you just send them a notification, change the name of your app. Good. Done. Don't ever send them another one. But also there is toast notifications. Toast notifications, if you saw, were very similar to what you saw when we have these little messages that pop up at the top. They're little toast notifications. They pop up at the top and say, hey, there's something going on. This thing just happened. Those are very interruptive, so be careful how much you use them because people will get annoyed. And then there's also these raw notifications that you can send. So this is more of a peer-to-peer thing. Raw notifications, your app has to be running. So maybe you have notifications that you want to send for a game. Like, I've got a game, you're playing the game, I want to see who's online with my games. You could send these notifications back and forth about what's going on within the app itself. So we wrap a bunch of this stuff up for you and show you how to use them. Is how do you notify? How do I know if I've been notified? So you got to find the channel, store the channel off, so that you can then you get a when you kind of register with Microsoft's push notification service. Because what happens is the phone goes, hey, I want to get notifications. We talk up to the cloud. This is a service run by Microsoft. The push notification service goes, oh, okay, cool. Well, here's your identity for the notification service. So it gives you this big long HTTP blah 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 URL back with the big long GUID at the end that notifies for your device, and then your device now has this notification. Then we send that back over to the Tailspin registration service, that ID, so that at the other end, real quick, I'll show you. Tailspin services registration. This guy registration service can go in and say, hey, by the way, what is the ID of this phone? Oh, they'll do that one yet, because that's not the one I wanted to do. But I'm sorry. But what's the ID of this phone? I can then store off the ID of the phone so that when new surveys come in, I can go, okay, based on the filters, based on the devices and who it is, this is how we know who you are, I can then send a notification to this device that these new surveys are in. So it's a kind of a three-way communication. Phone connects to push notification service. Push notification service says, here's your ID for that channel, for this notification. Then you give that ID back to your service on the back end that's going to be notifying the device. Back end service stores that information, pushes it back up to the Microsoft notification, then gives it to your device. There is a free service that comes with a notification that you can send like 1,500 messages an hour, I do believe, or 500 messages an hour. I can't remember the exact one. That's the one we're using because we didn't want you to have an account to have to use the notification service. And so, and those, by the way, those are not guaranteed. So if you send a notification, no guarantee that the phone's going to get it. So don't use it as a way of doing some mission critical thing because they're not guaranteed at all. So I don't want to go too much further because we're running out of time, and there's still tons of stuff to go over here. But I wanted to give some time for you guys to ask some questions of us, of anything. I know you guys had a lot of questions for Charlie around the phone, but anything about the development for the phone? Anyone? Anyone? Right here again. Yes. Yes. So the question was, can I use the Dev Fabric in simulation with a phone? So the answer is yes. So if I'm developing a cloud application, use the Dev Fabric, that's exactly how we have this set up. I can then start up the emulator, connect to the Dev Fabric. We actually have, if you look in our application, here, this is connected up to Tailspin, which is up in the cloud, but you could just say, you know, 127.0.0.1 and whatever port you want to connect to, you know. And then you connect to your local Dev Fabric to have that connected. And now, if you want to use push notification services, that will work too, because as long as you have an internet connection, the two go together, because the emulator will receive push notifications from Microsoft push notification service. Right here, yes. So the question is, does the phone support WR, Windows Error, otherwise known maybe as Watson, otherwise known as whatever other kind of communication? So unfortunately, the answer is yes, but no. So yes, there are, I do, and I this is still one of those points of contention. I see it on the list a lot. There is crash reports gathered on the phone. I don't think they make that available to you as a developer. They're working on this because there's no standard way of getting crash reports. One of the things we talk about in the guide is you may want to put in, and we did not put it into our realistic application, is how you may want to collect if your app crashes. Not that it ever will. God, no. If your app ever crashes, to collect that information and maybe have a way for the person to email using the email chooser to you as the developer, those type of things. It's not the greatest solution under the sun, but again, it was like, how do you get the phone out? It's what can we do at first? But I know that they are pushing into how do you collect these crash reports? How do you get them back there? And when you start doing that, you'll have to start thinking about how do I start, don't forget, back in the old school days for us old people, you'll start having to keep your symbols, because if I have version 1 that I get a crash report for, I better have the symbols for version 1, because that's the only way I'm going to be able to read that crash report. So,
and also be careful how much you log, right? It's actually
yes.
Storage still probably that you have to store it in, so be careful of that.
Questions? Any other ones?
Right back there.
Right there. Well, you don't have to use Azure.
I mean, it's just an endpoint, right? It's just
an endpoint.
So
yeah, it's just
if
an
it's
endpoint.
Cloud or something else, we'd you like could, it to be cloud. But
if you're only making $10 a month, you should probably put it on like Heroku or something and get it for free. Get some kind of free service in the back end. If you're making $10,000 a month, you should probably try to still make as much money as you can. I mean, I would.
So just make a plan for transition.
Yes. So the key is you'll have a DNS name that you'll have for your endpoint that you'll use. That's, you know, my app is the coolest app in the world.com, you know, colon 8080. It is. And then you would just transition that over to another server. But, I mean, you just have to kind of, that's kind of one of the things in it you have to do. And then, you know, Azure's going to cost you money. Maybe you want to start with a free version first. Right here. So, okay, great question. What does the phone offer for securing data when you store application data on the phone? It provides a lot of the crypto API from .NET 4. I can't remember all the ones off the top of my head. But again, you have to think about that in terms of keys, right? So if I have encrypted data on the phone, how do I unencrypt it when I show it to the user? Depending on what data you're encrypting. I mean, there's going to be some data you will want to encrypt, but where do I store that key? How do I unencrypt that data? Do I get a certificate? So one of the things you could do is get a certificate, maybe install it with a phone so that you can do a cert and have that signed back and forth. Oh, no.
No, isolated,
no.
It's per application isolated storage.
Yes, so every app is secure. The question was, can other applications read my data? So one of the reasons that Silverlight was chosen is because it's a sandbox. Once your app is there, no other app can talk to it, which kind of, if no one's figured that out, that means you can't talk to any other application. So if I have two applications, I can't talk to them on the phone. So no application can talk to each other.
And specifically, if you have a passcode on your phone, is that used as a key to sort of encrypt everything on the phone?
So the question was, if you have a passcode, is it used to encrypt everything? And I don't believe, I think the passcode is completely separate than any encryption or any other APIs you have to use yourself.
If you need to, yes. If you need to store secure data, then I would encrypt it somehow. I mean, and there are plenty of ways to do that, and it's all and there are a lot of documented ways. We actually talk about some in the guide, but you do have to think about where you're how you're going to deal with the key stuff, because it's especially if you do something that needs a key to unencrypt the data, how you do it. Now you may encrypt data that you want to encrypt and then send it across the wire and never have the user use it again. That's cool, because then you can send that across the wire and then unencrypt it somewhere else. But if you're unencrypting and decrypting data on the phone, number one, it's a heavyweight operation, battery power. Number two, dealing with keys is kind of painful because, you know, if you have the key on the phone, somebody steals the phone, well, they got everything they need. If you do it in the cloud, again, It's kind of hard if you're disconnected. Yes, sir, right here. Oh, so the question was, can I give a brief description of the phone, how much memory it has, all that good stuff? I could. I don't necessarily know how much memory this one has. There is a set of guidelines on this guy. I do believe this, they come in, I think this one has, I have no idea how much this one has. I actually haven't. I wonder if it'll tell us. So we look at the settings. Will it tell me how much it has? About... my demo phone. I think it just got mad at me for naming it a demo phone. So I don't know if I can't see. If I do connect it to my Zune, which I don't have the thing up here to do, it will tell you. I think this one has 64 gigs of memory, if I remember correctly, looking at my Zune.
I think it tells us at startup, but I don't remember.
Yeah, but
there's a minimum spec for the phones that are supposed to deliver, and then I think most phone developers can deliver significantly above that for memory.
Yeah, so there's 64 flash memory storage, and I think it's probably about 256 of it is for, you know, apps and stuff like that. So, and again, you can see that when you connect it to Zune, but I just don't remember. I'd be more than happy to, if you guys want to see it, I'll be back in the back, and we can hook it up to the to Zune, and you can see how you can drag and drop pictures from it and do all the other stuff, because it interacts with. So it's if you've ever had another smartphone that had on that started with an I, it's very similar. You have to have Zune on your box to deploy apps, have it running to deploy apps, and you use it to sync your device.
I think we had a few phones running around if people just want to take a look. We have this one here that Scott or I will probably have. I think Michael had one. He's in the back there if you don't know him. And
yeah, waving his hat. I think that's the only two we have.
Is that the only two? I thought Don might have one. But maybe
no, we have Don's.
Oh, okay. There you go.
We stole Don's.
I stole Don's. Excellent.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the time we have.
Oh, yeah, we only
maybe
have
one more question.
Maybe one more question. Right here.
Can you write to background apps or apps that kind of wake themselves up after intervals?
Nope. There are capabilities in the so no multitasking is basically the answer. No multitasking in this phone.
You can do some things while the phone's idle. You can also start background threads, but the app itself, I don't think it'll run in the background.
No, it will run as long as it's in this tombstone state, but I think there's only certain capabilities. And one of the things we didn't mention, but you'll learn and see in the guide, is that the capabilities are, when you want to do something, you have to list those capabilities. So if I want to do geo-tracking, I have to list those capabilities. If I want to do in the phone, so there's a manifest file that says, here are all the things that I want to do. If I want to use if I want to use geolocation, if I want to use a camera, if I want to use email, I think I can't remember if email is one of them. But there are certain capabilities of the phone you have to decide up front if you want to use. So you can put that in your manifest file and say, hey, I want to use all these capabilities, because then they can say when the user uses the application, they can say these are the things that you need. And remember that especially for location, that can be turned off at any time. Even any of these things can be turned off at any time. So remember, always check to make sure that you can actually do these things when you're actually trying to do them. So I think that's it.
Think
all
that's
the
it.
Time we have.
Around if you guys have more questions.
Yeah, we'll be around.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks.